W252DR Oshkosh. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, Trump defamation damages. I'm Chuck Sievertson. Former President Trump on social media says he plans to appeal what he calls a ridiculous jury verdict. The panel in federal court in New York orders Mr. Trump to pay an advice columnist $83.3 million total for defaming her. Mr. Trump previously was found by a jury to have sexually assaulted and defamed E. Jean Carroll. Outside court, ABC's Aaron Katursky.
And when the jury was polled, meaning when the judge asked each of the nine jurors one by one to affirm that this, in fact, was their verdict, E. Jean Carroll smiled at them.
ABC's John Santucci.
If this verdict holds up, he's got to pay somebody nearly $100 million. If he loses this case with the New York Attorney General, that he has to sell all the businesses and properties, those images, those iconic addresses that Donald Trump likes to brag about on Fifth Avenue, they may get for sale signs out front.
This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A record number of people in Wisconsin are enrolled in health insurance on healthcare.gov. More than 266,000, according to the Department of Health Services. That's a 20% increase from the previous open enrollment period. Open enrollment is over, but some people can enroll year-round. A bill to ban abortion in Wisconsin after 14 weeks of pregnancy has passed the state assembly. Republican Representative Karen Hurd.
I am so in favor of women's rights and women to make whatever health decisions they want. I want everybody to make their own health decision. But here's the conundrum in this. There's another life involved.
10 Republicans voted against the binding referendum. Governor Evers says he'd veto any bill to restrict abortion access. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home. This is news from WISS and WGBW. The man accused of killing another man in downtown Appleton on Christmas Eve is ordered to stand trial. Yesterday was Elliot Campbell's preliminary hearing. Witnesses say Campbell shot Elijah Dodson after a fight escalated over someone cutting in line at a food cart off College Avenue. The shooting rattled the neighborhood and police made extra patrols in the days afterward. Campbell returns to court on February 8th. The weather might not be ideal, but the Outagamie Conservation Club's snowmobile and ATV races are on for tomorrow. Organizers tell Channel 11 there are roughly 50 classes between snowmobiles, ATVs, motorcycles, and dirt bikes. The track is made completely of ice, and warm weather forced last year's event to be canceled. Organizers say it's the Outagamie Conservation Club's biggest fundraiser of the year. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass. Eyes waiting. Started to wonder. Metamorphosis. Philosopher you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Badgers take on Sparty. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers host the Michigan State Spartans at the Kohl Center, but the Badgers will be without their backup point guard. Kamari McGee suffered an injury to his ankle and right foot in the second half of their game against Indiana. McGee out of Racine St. Catharines now listed as out indefinitely. Marquette hosts Seton Hall tomorrow at noon. NBA, the Bucks and Doc Rivers agreeing to a four-year deal worth $40 million. Rivers taking over for Adrian Griffin, fired Tuesday. The Bucks host the Cavaliers tonight. Joe Prunty on his role as the Bucks interim head coach.
Circumstances are always different, but like I said, you just do. Time doesn't stand still. You got to keep moving forward. And so, okay, what decisions need to be made? How are we going to handle this? What do you say to the players? What do you say to the coaching staff? And so I was proud of the guys for doing that, like coming out and staying focused on what we needed to do.
That's the Bucks' Joe Prunty. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Drizzle, light rain, and cloudy with foggy areas tonight and a low in the low 30s. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a high in the upper 30s. And more clouds around on Sunday, some foggy areas and mid-30s. Sunshine Monday, high approaching 40. A chance of rain and snow showers Monday night. Currently 35 degrees.
There are 1,000 ways to say it.
Nope. Knock it off. Shut it down. Dream on. No dice. Give it a rest. Not a chance.
Or just
all text. You focus on the road.
As a passenger, you have the power to prevent an accident. There are 1,000 ways to stop a distracted driver. Choose one.
A message from CTIA.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Broadcasting from the Civic Media Studios on South Main Street, this is Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy.
What is up, Wisconsin? And welcome to yet another Maggie Dawn show, somehow missing Maggie Dawn. Like a tuna can you open with no tuna inside. Like a day without, I don't know, baseball. Is there some phrase like that? I wasn't told until 5 minutes ago that I would have to speak on air. So this is what you get. It's not law school professional. It's not even technically on air professional. It's just what happens when you let the producer run wild until... There she is. There's our girl. Hello. Maggie, how are you? Welcome to your show.
Oh, busy, busy day. Thanks for getting her started for me, Anya.
I try.
The blessing of live radio includes that it gets people like me to places on time. So thanks, everybody, for your patience. Lots of fun stuff to talk about, but a few programming notes before we get crack-a-lackin'. If you enjoyed hearing from Professor Kathleen Eden, she's going to be back with us on January 23rd. On January 24th, the very next day, I'm going to be joined by my former colleague and good friend, Joanna Frotchek, who's a lawyer and also an immigrant. And she's going to tell you and me and us a little bit about her journey. But really excited to say that I've got a Civic Media exclusive interview coming up on Monday with outgoing Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, who has been the DA in this county since 2006. He's been given some pretty candid interviews on you, so I'm looking forward to that.
And one more time, what day is that?
That is this coming Monday.
All good.
So everybody put that on your calendars, and you're not going to want to miss that. Of course, Civic Media is going to be broadcasting the Packers playoff game coming up. That's going to be interesting because first of all, the Packers' former coach is now the Cowboys' coach. So that's an interesting patina on that matchup. You're not going to want to miss that. It's going to be all across the Civic Media radio network. We've got our Kenosha and Racine stations carrying it. If you need to find a place to listen to the game, do not worry. Civic Media has you covered. Just go ahead and download that app. You will find the Packers game there for you. Today, I think we're going to have a really interesting exchange, all of us together now. Because I'd like to talk about Dr. Claudine Gay, the former Harvard University president, who, along with the presidents of three other Ivy League universities, testified before Congress when hearings were commenced and convened to address anti-Semitism on campuses. And I'm not sure, Anya, if you were able to find that sound. She does have it. Let's just take a quick listen. This is Representative Elise Stefanik asking Dr. Gay a pretty particular question. Let's take a listen.
There is yes that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard Code of Conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
It may be no.
So that's really, in various ways, shapes, and forms, that's what all of the college and university presidents that were testifying before Congress that day said. Interesting little side note on all of this. MIT's president remains in place, which is interesting. I believe the rest of the presidents have resigned or been removed after that testimony. Interesting side, sort of inside baseball, if you are interested in this sort of thing. There has been a flurry of industry gossip amongst public relations consultants and lawyers about who the heck advised these people to answer these questions this way, because that was terrible, right? I mean, give me a call, 844-967-2789, if you want to get in on our discussion today, because I think lots of people are going to have various perspectives on this. And there's a couple of subtopic areas that I want to get into, but it was just fascinating to me as a legal professional when I heard that testimony. I thought, who the heck told them to answer the question like that? Like, that's terrible. Calling for the genocide of any people should violate whatever the heck policy you want to talk about, especially if it's directed at historically oppressed and marginalized groups. Like, that's not good. And it certainly should be possible on a college campus to be able to engage the complicated discussion of the history of the Mideast, of the problematic aspects of Prime Minister Netanyahu, who operates in many ways in an authoritarian type model, who tried to strip Israel's Supreme Court of its oversight powers. We can have that conversation. We can criticize Netanyahu's military response. We can do all of those things. We can talk about whether or not a two-state solution is possible. What does that mean? We can have complicated conversations. In fact, we need to have them, don't we? But being able to have complicated conversations means that you sometimes have to get the simple stuff right. Because if you don't get the simple stuff right, people stop listening. And the simple answer here was that violates Harvard policy to call for the genocide of Jewish people. That's the answer. So I think the failure of those presidents to know in and of themselves to answer the question that way, even if they were advised poorly by their PR experts and their legal experts, they answered the question poorly. Now, of course, these things intersect with free speech rights. Because here in the United States, it's not illegal. And in fact, we protect some of the most abhorrent speech that you can imagine. And so there's a question, are speech codes even appropriate on college campuses? That's a question I'd love to hear people talk about. And so while I don't actually think Dr. Gay's answer to the question is incorrect, right? What she's saying is, if someone just gets up and says that, something that is that disturbing, it likely would violate the policy if it is accompanied by other aggressive actions, a history of hateful behavior and speech, all these sorts of things. In other words, it poses a threat to the academic environment, to the safety of other students. But as a pure matter of First Amendment jurisprudence, right, people can say terrible things, call for the genocide of people. And that's protected speech. Now, universities are, these universities, MIT, Harvard, I think it was Princeton, and who else was there? I'm forgetting. MIT, Harvard, Princeton, and I think it was Penn. Those are private institutions. Those aren't state universities. So they can make whatever rules they want. It's not the government acting there. which is why they can have a speech code. You won't see similar in most public universities. So, do I think that Dr. Gay's failure to respond to that question in a way that was would resonate appropriately, did that merit her firing or being forced out? I don't know. I don't run a university. I'm not in higher education. So that's not my judgment to make. And I think people can make arguments on either side of that one. But the other thing that I want to talk about, so a question to you all, should there be speech codes on campuses? Right? How does that impact academic freedom? How do we prepare young people to be able to engage with complexity? Frankly, engage with people that say things that they find deeply offensive. And doesn't this sound a lot like the debate that we're having about book bans on the other end of the spectrum? Right? So it seems to me that frankly, people on both sides of the political dial seem to be quite situational about when they want to protect speech and when they don't. It seems to me that people on both sides of the spectrum in these questions seem to be pretty selective about exposing young people to challenging and sometimes offensive, upsetting content. So there's a lot here. Should there be speech codes on campuses? One of the things that I wanted to reach was what I think is clearly a pretextual reason, meaning a garbage reason, a reason that sounds good but isn't the real reason, that there was a pretextual reason to forcing Dr. Gay out. And the pretextual reason was that she plagiarized. And I'm going to talk about actually how academics publish, what peer review actually entails in higher education, in part how professors and other university leaders are compensated, how those things figure into all of this. And I'm going to actually get down to the brass tacks of how frequent plagiarism occurs, that plagiarism isn't a point, it's not a narrowly defined set of things, that there's actually sort of a spectrum of plagiarism and academic dishonesty, that, you know, that all allegations of plagiarism are not the same in their seriousness. And that this is, frankly, totally well-known and accepted amongst members of the academy. And so I want to hear from you. Did you attend a university or college that had a plagiarism policy? How was it enforced, if at all? Was it just part of the honor code or code of conduct for the university? Because I just think that this issue has been completely misrepresented in the press. I think the dialogue around this has been woefully inadequate. And to me, at the end of the day, Dr. Gay stands as a premier example of the phenomena that I myself have experienced, that when mistakes are made by women and people of color or LGBTQ people in positions of leadership, authority, and power, those become fatal. When the same or worse conduct or mistakes by old white dudes gets graciousness, understanding, and excuse making. Keep it locked, everybody. Join our conversation, 844-967-2789, here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
And I'm crazy for loving.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try soon. Harry's is available online and in-store at a retailer near you. Get a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/quality. That's harrys.com/quality. Or check us out at your local Costco for a price you can't find anywhere else. Just look for the Chrome Razor with 13 blade refills at your local Costco. You can't miss it. Exclusive to Costco members.
Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Go ahead, give her a call, 844-967-2789. I'd love to hear your thoughts about how the presidents of Harvard, MIT, and Penn handled their congressional testimony. If you think there should be such a thing as speech codes on university and college campuses, how do we square that with the First Amendment? Want to hear your thoughts if you attended a university that has a plagiarism policy. Most of them do. Any experience with getting it enforced? Many of you may know, if you're a regular listener here on the Maggie Dawn Show, that I have a master's degree in applied economics. Applied economics is basically like mathematical econ. So you learn all the concepts and theories of the fundamental principles of micro and macroeconomics. And then you actually have to learn and demonstrate knowledge and proficiency in the mathematics that proves up the economic theory. So yeah, it's a little weedy. And you have to you have to complete a thesis, a master's thesis, and then defend it. It's like PhD light. It's a prerequisite to going on to get a PhD or a doctor in philosophy. And in fact, my work on my thesis ended up being published. I was a co-author on that work with the professor who helped oversee my thesis and the research project that I based my thesis upon. Pretty unusual to be a master's student and get co-author credit, but it was a wonderful surprise. And I'm very thankful to my thesis advisor, Dr. David Clark at Marquette University, that helped me with that. I say all of that as background to just share, I have some knowledge and firsthand experience with the way academic publications work. So let me explain. Typically, to get your work published, if you are a university professor or someone that is in a tenure track to become a full tenured professor at a university, to do so, you need to publish. You need to publish a lot. And what qualifies something for publication basically is one thing. It has a lot of elements to it, but it's one thing. You are moving an existing theory of your particular specialty forward by showing new and different, typically quantitative analyses that relate to a particular topic. Or you have basically a brand new idea or theory or research body of research that you've conducted that you're sharing, that sort of blockbuster, changing the field in some way or moving it, revolutionizing, moving the field forward. There's an idea of it has to be your new idea, your new way of analyzing, a new application of prior research models. It has to be your ideas. That's the core of what is required in academic publications. So how does that happen? If you think about various specializations, it's like, hasn't everything under the sun been written about Keynesian economics? Turns out not. That's what academics do. They try to push the bounds of their particular specializations. They try to see if theories still hold up. It's a kind of a version of scientific inquiry, if you will. But typically, professors and folks on a tenure track to become professors work with research assistants who are typically graduate level students to conduct new research. And then they have those graduate assistants write up paper drafts that the professors then review and submit to various academic journals. What makes a journal academic? A journal is like a magazine that publishes academic papers. Yes, if you're all yawning, that's what most people would do. And here's what. The vast majority of academic papers published in academic journals don't get read much. There's hundreds and thousands of these that get cranked out every year because you get compensated as a professor and you become a full professor with tenure protections based on your publication volume and the prestige of the journals in which you get to publish your original thinking and research in. Do you see where I'm going with this? So they have research assistants and graduate students typically actually do the work and some of the number crunching and the writing. They then submit these things to these academic journals that review the paper. And they are supposed to be reviewing the paper to make sure that it is indeed original. It's a brand new idea. It's a new analysis. They're moving that particular specialty forward. They're supposed to check the data validity. They're supposed to check it for plagiarism. But who sits on academic journal editorial review boards? Any guesses, right? It's professors, right? Other academics in the specialty. They get compensated to do it. But guess what professors don't want to do? Spend a whole lot of time reading volumes and volumes and volumes of submissions to journals. So who do they give that work to? Guess what? It's their graduate research assistants. Guess what graduate research assistants are doing? A ton of work. They may be teaching courses, grading courses, writing the work for professors, doing the research for professors, and then reviewing the paper submissions that a professor is responsible for because they sit on a journal's submissions committee or their editorial review committee. Research assistants get worked to death. I know I was one. And so what happens is you have people who have not been in that particular field for very long. They're brand new academics in their field. For me, mathematical economics. And it is these newbies that in many circumstances are the ones that are reviewing the journal submissions. Okay. And keep in mind that the incentive structure for folks on tenure track and full professors is publish. You've heard this phrase, publish or perish. This is what it refers to. So you've created an incentive system where people are compensated based on their publications. And that system is fueled and largely the work gets done by very new green graduate students in these various fields. And I'm going to throw this last log on the fire, and then we come back from these important messages. I'll tell you what the implication of all of this is. And then on top of it, take this fact. The number of academic journals in the United States has exploded in the last 5 years. Just exploded. I don't have the statistic at the ready, but it's something like doubled or tripled. So when we come back, I'm going to stitch all of this together. And we're going to talk about then what plagiarism is and the systems that actually promote it, allow it to go unchecked. And then we can talk about and understand selective enforcement, selective punishment for so-called plagiarism. And indeed, that is what happened to Dr. Gay. I am Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esser. Go ahead and give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll be back with more in a moment on this edition of The Maggie Dawn Show.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refresh.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen in Milwaukee today to talk about the economy, which is defying expectations. New data from the Commerce Department shows GDP shot up 3.3% from October to December.
We have an economy that has been growing at a good, healthy pace. I see no reason why that can't continue. I think 2024 is going to be a very